8:30, because the meeting will end a little bit later than 8:30, but, you know, I'm getting anybody else's. Okay. Morning, everybody. Looking great this morning. We should change the clock every week, right? Okay.
An hour. It's great. The women need it.
Okay. Okay. We were in the middle of again, what in this edition is section Hay of the first Be'er, and we actually quote unquote completed it, but where we were specifically stopped and focused was on the last interpretation, the last piece of the verse in Koheles that he was trying to interpret, which he was interpreting, which was referring to the sages as Balei Asufos, the people of the groups, the people of groups. And the Gemara in Chagiga, which the Maral is explaining here, describes the phenomenon which we're all familiar with, and which is one of the most basic issues that trouble us in approaching the words of Chachamim. And that is that the Gemara describes groups of Chachamim, a group here, a group there. They're all examining the same questions. These ones say Tameh, these ones say Tohar. These ones say forbidden, these ones say permitted. These ones say Kosher, these ones say Pasul. So the Gemara says you have about everything. There's a difference of opinion. So a person might say, how am I supposed to be able to learn Torah? Right? So the Gemara says, first of all, excuse me, Kulam Nitnu, the verse says, Meraya Echa. They all come from one Raya, from one shepherd. From one God. Nobody's quoting other gods. Nobody's quoting other prophets other than Moshe Rabbeinu. They're all working to understand the Torah's Hashem. And we spent some time last week talking about that idea that the world of legitimate opinions that the Gemara is drawing, that the Gemara is expanding to include, are all where we're not working with our own preconceived notions or extra conceived notions. We're working with the notions that are coming from the Torah's Hashem completely. And we're working with the premise of the divinity of the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu and the absoluteness of its truth. But within that, there's the ambiguity of understanding, which still leaves us with the possibility for argument. So the Gemara says, well, but how am I supposed to learn now? I mean, we're still left with this great and significant ambiguity. Says the Gemara, well, what the person has to do is, say, asnecha kafar cheses, make your ear like a funnel, listen to what everybody has to say, and listen to the arguments in each direction, and make your choice. And as we again discussed last week, just briefly to summarize, there we're talking about the words of the Chachamim. For us, generally speaking, the idea is, as we have in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, Asei lecha rav yistalek min hasafek, right? If we have a specific Rebbe, a specific posek, so then we would follow their sorting through of the issue. They'll sort through the issue, and what they decide, they will convey to us, and we will abide by that psak. So we have the idea that the Gemara is explaining in the pasuk that they're all trying to figure out the Torah. They're all working on the same basis. There's some room for all of them, but you have to still sort it out and find the right way. And we also mentioned the Gemara in Erevin, where the Gemara had the famous thing about the years that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued with each other, until the point where a heavenly voice, and they couldn't figure out who the halacha should be like, nobody could carry the psak, until a heavenly voice came out and said, these and those are the words of the living God, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim, but the halacha is like Beis Hillel. So the Gemara brings both of these things. The Gemara wants to know, why is the halacha like Beis Hillel? And that's going to be the subject matter of the next shtickle, the next piece in the next section in the Maral. We will leave for now. But we certainly have this idea that you can have both of them as quote-unquote legitimate opinions, but at the same time, you're going to try to narrow down the halacha, that the halacha is going to be like what? So we have a few things that we need to figure out. One thing we need to figure out is to understand more fully how is it that there is indeed ambiguity in the Torah. And another thing that we need to figure out let's focus primarily on these two, is okay, so if they are both legitimate opinions, why is the assumption that there has to be the halacha like one? Right? Why the halacha is like Beis Hillel, the Gemara explains. Given that it's going to have to be between one of the two of them, we rule like Beis Hillel. But that the halacha should go like one of them, that we shouldn't be left with the multiplicity of opinions, that's something also that we need to discern, we need to understand. So let's deal with the first thing first. We started briefly on it last week. Let's review what he said and let's delve into it some more. The Maral said that, I'll read to you a little bit of a snippet of it, it's on page Pei Vav here in this edition. It's impossible for all of the sages to think the same way. It's impossible that there shouldn't be differences in their positions based on their differences in their seichel, in the way they think. Because everything in the world, everything in the world is multifaceted. It has more than one aspect. Every single item has more than one facet. Sha'afim adavar tameh. Even if the item itself is tameh, e'efshir shelo yeh lo tzad b'china el tara shoma. It still has a pure aspect to it. V'cheinim adavar tara, and something which is pure. E'efshir shelo yeh b'china ma'ashel tumah. It has a tameh aspect to it. V'nei adam mechulakim b'seichel. And people think differently. The efshir shiyu kol seichel b'neinam al derech echad, and people don't, again, impossible for them to all think the same way. Lakach, and therefore, kol echad ve'echad mekabel b'china achas kefi chiluk sichla. And therefore, each person focuses on a different facet. Each person, when their opinion is forged by the facet which looms largest to them, which seems the greatest and the most significant in their eyes. This is what the Maral says in short, in, you know, briefly, and the way he's explaining this idea that there is almost necessarily machlokas. There's necessarily machlokas because there are two complexities here. There's a complexity in the subject being discussed. Every subject is not so simple. It's not what we say black and white. It's a little murky, it's a little gray, there are different aspects to it. And then, the people who are looking at it, there's differences between them. So given that the subject is, right, if it's black, right, or white, it doesn't matter how different we are, it's just black, right, everybody will see it as being black, everybody will see it being as being white. But when it's a little bit multicolored, it's a little bit of a hue, a shade, you know, this way, that way, the other way, so then there's room for ambiguity, and if we're different, we might see things a little bit differently. That's what the Maral establishes. So what does this mean? What is this idea that these things are going to be necessarily ambiguous? There's a classic Gemara, it's on the same page as the other Gemara in Erevin of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Gemara says as follows. Amar Rav Avo, Amar Rav Yechon, Talmid Hayolaylo Rabbi Meir. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm starting too far ahead. Amar Rav Acha Bar Chanina. This whole Gemara, this little section in the Gemara is singing the praises of Rabbi Meir, the great sage Rabbi Meir. Right. This is where you find in the Gemara the famous statement, the relatively famous statement that Rabbi said that the reason why I am sharper than many of my peers is because I saw the back of Rabbi Meir's head. And had I seen Rabbi Meir's face, I would have been that much more brilliant, that much more bright. Right? The Sforna compares it to when Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he took off his mask so that people could see his face when he taught them the Torah, and then he put it back on afterwards. Right? Because seeing the face, when you're dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu, when you're dealing with the Gedolei Olam like Rabbi Meir, Chachmas Adam Torah Panav, it makes a difference. It's a something which requires more. It's a classic Agadeic statement. It requires more understanding. But this is the great Rabbi Meir. So listen to the great Rabbi Meir. Rav Chanina Rachar and Hina said, "Gol of Yodua lifnei Misha Amar v'haya Olam she'im Medayer Shor Amir Kamaisai." Hashem knew clearly that Rav Meir had no peer in his time. He was above and beyond everybody else. But you know, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Halacha Rav Yehuda. We generally paskin not like Rabbi Meir, right? In the end, we don't paskin like Rav Meir. So if God knows that Rabbi Meir is the wise one, the brilliant one, so why did the generation not rule like Rabbi Meir? Shalayachu chaver of lamed al seif datay. The problem was he was so brilliant that people didn't understand him. He would take something which was tohar, no question, and suddenly he would give arguments to explain that it's really tame. He would take something that's tame, no question, and he would suddenly produce arguments to say that it was really tohar. So if a person can make a case that Al Capone is the Gadol HaDor,
it's a distant cousin, but still related.
Right, if a person can take anything and twist it, then how can you tell when their arguments are real or when their arguments are just that? Raz Rashi says, "Lo yochlu lahavin be'ezed dvarav nechaynim uvaze ein dvarav nechaynim." They never understood when what he was saying was on the mark or when it wasn't. He could explain anything. He could explain something which he himself would agree was wrong. He could explain why it was right. He went to an Ivy League law school. So Satana, Loi Rabbi Meir Shemai, El Rabbi Neiroi Shemai, and so on. The Gemara brings other nice things about Rabbi Meir. And then the Gemara, you know, skip down a few lines, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Avo said in the Rabbi Yechon, Talmud Hayolei Rabbi Meir v'Sumchus Shmai. Rabbi Meir had a student, his name was Sumchus. He appears in a number of places in the Gemara. Shayemer al kol davar davar shel tuma arboi mushmeina tamei tuma, val kol davar davar shel tara arboi mushmeina talmid tamei tara. For anything which was tamei, he would give 48 reasons, 48 demonstrations of its tuma. Everything which is Torah, he would explain. Everything which was Tameh, he would explain with 48 ways. Tana, we learned, Talmud Vasek HaYiviyavna Shayim Etaris HaSheretz B'mei V'chamishim Taimeh. There was a great Talmud in Yavne who would take a Sheretz, right, the Torah lists as Tameh, and he would explain it as being pure with 150 different arguments. Again, demonstrating this power of Rabbi Meir to argue anything. Amar Ravina ani odem va'atarenu. Ravina says, forget this ancient great Talmud was in Yavne, in the seat of the Sanhedrin at the time that the Beis Hamikdash stood, right after the time the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Ravina said, Ravina is from the age of the editing of the Gemara. Right? He's a late sage, he's not a Tana, he's not even of the early Amoraim, of the early sages of the Talmud, he's of the later sages. He says, I'll give you an argument. He says a nachash, a snake, which kills. So in other words, he brings death into the world, but there's no tumas nevela by a nachash. So by this other sheretz, which doesn't bring death into the world, how much more so? He says the Gemara, no, the argument could be diffused because Maisa v'kaitz v'almaka of it. Whatever, the snake is not considered associated with the tumah, it's not considered bringing the tumah, it's just like a face, like a thorn, like a bullet. Whatever the argument, back and forth. But here's this thing, that in Yavne, this was what this person was able to do, demonstrating the tamim l'tamim. The Gemara says, even a little bit further, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, this is Sanhedrin on Sanhedrin Daf Zayin. The Gemara here is discussing the qualifications for membership in the Supreme Court. of the Jewish people, of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara speaks about they have to be of a certain stature, a certain wisdom, a certain appearance, a certain age. They have to know 70 languages, all this other stuff. Rav Yehuda says, "A meshivin mitsanhedrin ella mi sheyodea letaris hasheretz min atayra." You can only put on the Sanhedrin somebody who would be able to be mitayr, to purify the sheretz min atayra. Right? And Rav said, "Ani odun v'atayrenu," and he brought the same thing here. You have the Girsa Rav, but he brings the same argument by the as Ravina brings in the Gemara over here in Erev. What's the idea? Because, you know, in the Sanhedrin, they're deciding very, very important things. They have to have good debating skills. They have to have a broad perspective as well to be able to see the different facets of an issue. Okay, so we hereby have this sense. As the Maharal says, everything has various facets, and everything can be seen in different ways. Even something which is plain speak, it's known, it's clear that it's Tameh, there you're going to be able to find arguments for Tara. So how much more so something that the Torah didn't directly address and say that it's Tameh or Tar, Asur or Mutar, and it's left to try to figure it out by analysis, by comparison, by various, you know, derivative methods, how much more so that there's going to be ambiguity. Okay, so there's ambiguity. But why is it that there is necessarily this ambiguity? What is the basis for this assumption? Okay, so what did we say everything goes back to? The Garden of Eden. Okay, so let's go gardening. It's a beautiful day for gardening. The eight hadas taivara, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. First week that we learned together, if you remember, we talked to you about the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam's. In the beginning of the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam speaks about this tree of knowledge of good and evil. What is so terrible? Sounds like a good thing. It's a good thing for a person to know good and evil, to understand and to be able to have moral discrimination, to be able to determine between these two things. What's the avla, what's the terrible thing that for the day he eats from it, he will know good and evil? So what did the Rambam explain? He said that the idea was that before he ate from the tree of knowledge, he also had knowledge, but his knowledge wasn't of good and bad. His knowledge was of emes v'sheker, of truth and falsehood. He saw the issues of morality in absolute terms. And the example which we gave to illustrate it was a series of statements. The earth is flat, good or bad? Look at me like I'm crazy. Not good or bad. The earth are flat. The earth is flat, that would be a question which would be true or false. Chocolate ice cream, true or false? You look at me like I'm crazy, right? You'll say that's a question whether it's good or bad, right? Matter of taste. Stealing, what do you say for that? True or false, or good or bad? We don't say true or false. We don't say stealing is a falsehood. We say stealing is a bad thing. So you use the same measure of judgment for stealing as you do for chocolate ice cream. Whereas we know that for chocolate ice cream it's much clearer. I'm sorry. We use the same measure. How can we use the same measure? How's it shayach? How's it possible to have this way? Says the Rambam, that before the Chet of Adam HaRishon, that was truth and falsehood. They saw it with the absolute vision of right and wrong, true and false, not subject to anything. But after Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, after he ate from the tree of knowledge, and he became more motivated by the simple physical drives, as we see the whole nature of the sin of the tree of knowledge, that became more of a factor in terms of his life, his physicality, and his soul and his spirituality and his mind started to mix together. Remember what we described the first week. That's why we talk about the wisdom of the heart. Right? The heart is where those two things interact together. It's not the brain or the soul. And, you know, it's not just simply the body. It's where those two things come together. Then things become a little bit more clouded, because there's a motivating factor. There's something in there for him that affects his view of the specific thing, of the specific presentation, and therefore it becomes much more subjective. That description is a description of switching again, the way the Rambam described it is das tiver, a knowledge of good and evil instead of a knowledge of truth and falsehood. Things become clouded, right? Truth and falsehood is where you have an absolute clear division between the two. Tivera is where it's a little bit more subjective, less absolute, less perfectly clear. And that's a product of the chet. That's a product of the sin. There are others who translate the difficulty of Das Tovara differently than the Rambam, and in a way which perhaps makes the translation of it more directly hitting on what we're talking about. The Rambam is saying this idea that things have gotten confused. Things can become a matter of perspective. What we have over here, a sheretz, I don't know. If you look at it this way, if you look at it that way, stealing. If you look at it this way, you look at it that way. It depends where you're coming from. It's not like the world is flat, which just, you know, go up in the rocket ship, the space shuttle, and you look at the world, you'll see that it's round. No debate, no discussion anymore. Right? Stealing, you could still, you know, Robin Hood. You know, I don't know, that those people aren't so legitimate to begin with. Right? Crazy the amount of taxes that they're charging us, you know, and so on and so forth. All kinds of justifications that can possibly exist. The new involuntary tzedakah program, right? You know, the different possibilities.
That it's too close to home.
Tov v'ra, das tov v'ra, says the Rambam. Again, you're moving from a measure of knowledge of truth and falsehood to knowledge of good and bad, subjective terms. Says the, however, in other sources they understand it differently, and they say, what is the term das? Das is knowledge. That's usually the way we translate it. But das is also a term which is used for connection. The verse uses, right after it describes the sin of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, it begins and says, Vayeda Adam es Chava Ishtai. Adam knew his wife Chava. What does that mean, he knew his wife Chava? It means he was intimate with his wife Chava. He connected with his wife Chava. They became together, so to speak, like one, and they produced a child, which is actually fusing the two of them into one. Das, knowledge, is a term which can be used for, as Rashi says, for Ava, for unifying, for putting together things. So there are those who understand that Vayeda, that Das, Tovara, is where Tovara become very connected to each other. Like Adam became so enmeshed with Chava, intimately enmeshed one with the other, Tovara became enmeshed with each other. Confusion came. It's not, oh, now I know Tovara. Now Tovara to me becomes a little bit jumbled, a little bit so linked that I'm not able to distinguish the two of them from each other. Perhaps as a way of looking at that, which I may confuse you by bringing this, but at the same time, it's very, very much hitting on the same thing. The Gemara has a discussion. Matzoi Shabbos, when we say Shemoneh Esrei, when we daven Matzoi Shabbos Mariv, right after Shabbos, we're supposed to be Mavdil B'Tfilah. Besides the Havdalah we make over a cup of wine with the candle, with the Besamim, after Shabbos is over, we're also supposed to say Havdalah in the Shemoneh Esrei, in the davening. Just like on Shabbos, you'll mention Shabbos in the davening, and on Rosh Chodesh and on Yontiv, you'll mention the specific day in the davening. So in its own way, it's not exactly the same, but you're supposed to also be Mavdil B'Tfilah. You're supposed to say Havdalah during the Shemoneh Esrei. So the Gemara says, where do you do it? And there are different opinions as to where you should say the paragraph of Havdalah, or the paragraph of the Shemoneh Esrei's Havdalah in the Amidah. What's the conclusion? The conclusion is we say it in Chonen Hadas, in the first bracha of the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei. What do you mean? We have the three brachas which we say at the beginning of the Shemoneh Esrei every day of the year. And the same with the last few brachas, every day of the year. The middle is what changes. Shabbos, we say each tefillah, we say its own thing. Weekdays, we say 13 middle brachos. The first one of those middle brachos is the bracha of Chonen Hadas, blessed are you Hashem, or who grants people, graces people with das, with wisdom, with knowledge. And there we say the bracha of Havdalah. We say, Atachanantanu l'madatar sechli, you graced us to know your Torah, and you taught us to distinguish. And first of all, you taught us to do your mitzvahs, and you taught us to distinguish between the holy and the profane, between light and dark, between the 6 days and Shabbos, and so on and so forth. That's the conclusion. That's where we say. And that's, you look in your siddur, right? You know, that's where we say. Why do we say it there? So in the Gemara, what we have in the Talmud Bavli and Brachas, it says because it's the first weekday bracha. This is the bracha which is separating Shabbos from the weekday. Really, it's the bracha which validates going on to say the rest of the weekday Shemoneh Esrei. So it makes sense. At the get-go, this is considered the get-go for a weekday function. So you say it there. In the Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud, it says a different reason. And the reason it says there is because im ein das havdalah minayin. This is a bracha about distinguishing, about separating. Separating between light and dark, between the Jews and the nations of the world, between the 6 day and the other days, between the holy and the profane. That requires das. That requires das. So therefore, in the bracha of das, we speak about the ability to distinguish. What is it saying? Das, knowledge, is at once used as das taivara, we said before, you know, connection, and das is used for havdalah, for separation. Imein das havdalah minay. If there's no das, how are you going to be able to distinguish? Now, there's a great ambiguity there. On the one hand, das can be described, as we've said here, to some degree as confusion, as connection. On the other hand, das is described as the ability to be able to distinguish. We might say, if there wasn't das of Tovara, then we would have no difficulty at all discriminating. You understand the ambiguity, or have I confused you? That you understand what you're confused about, or have I confused you so much you don't even understand what we're confused about? You understand what we're?
What's the question?
Sorry. Havdalah, you know, when I was growing up in Montreal, in Mont Wine, we used to always say over from Rav Huttner. There was something that Rav Huttner used to say as a piskam, as just a statement. He says, look what we say in Havdalah. We say, Hamadu min kodesh l'chol, between the holy and the profane, and arlo chayshin, between the light and darkness, ben Yisrael amin, between the Jews and the nations of the world. So he said, look, in one breath, so when you're going to be able to tell the difference between Yisrael amin, between the Jews and the nations of the world, like you can tell the difference between when it's light and when it's dark, then you see straight. Then you have the das of Havdalah. Now, that's not so simple, right? Now, is he saying that? Because that's a challenge. Because we don't have necessarily the ability to perceive and to see clearly the tremendous, tremendous inherent difference which exists. That's part of this difficulty of Havdalah. The difficulty of Havdalah and the, you know, Matzah Shabbos, we make Havdalah, you know, it's pretty quick, you know. Could smell the pizza already, or whatever else it is, you know, the Starbucks, right? It's coming, you know, so Havdalah, we're out of here, right? Shabbos is over. But to distinguish Bein Yom HaShvi'i Sheshes Yimei HaMaaseh, to see the stark differences, not simple. Requires, again, what we call Das. But all of that, again, the difficulty stems from the fact there's a little bit of this in here, there's a little bit of that in here. How are we going to be able to distinguish sharply? What Adam HaRishon did when he ate from the tree of knowledge was he chose to mix together, to not have this stark separation which made the world so black and white, but to in fact bring together to make the world a more complex and a more confusing place. In the words, right, we quoted the first week when we learned about the lay, Helokim asa es adam yashar, God made man straight, where everything was clear, Vehema bikshu cheshbonos rabim, but they sought many calculations. Rabbi Meir would have been out of business if Adam HaRishon didn't eat from the tree of knowledge. You wouldn't be able to start arguing 48 reasons or 150 reasons to be metayer asheretz, to explain why the bad is really good. It would have been very, very clear. The lines would have been drawn very, very clearly. Adam HaRishon created a world of much more complicated bechira, much more complicated choice, because it became a choice in terms of an inability to distinguish. Things became murky, they became more qualified. Let me try to bring something else, another source about this issue, to perhaps help bring out this which is murky. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, beginning of the second parak of Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says a person has to be mechashev, a person has to calculate schar mitzvah keneged hefseda and hefsed mitzvah keneged schar. You have to calculate the reward of a mitzvah relative to its hefsed, to its loss, and the loss of a mitzvah of an aveira relative to its gain. What does that mean? So the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that one looks at a mitzvah and one says, look, you know, here it is, this thing, this esrig, it's going to cost me X amount of dollars, $50 for this little of an esrig, right? These matzahs, right? About $50 a piece, right? You know, for the matzahs, very, very expensive. Look how much I stand to lose to fulfill these mitzvahs, right? Or I'm giving up this position because this position would require a compromise in this area, in that area. It'll require a compromise in Shabbos. It'll require a compromise in Kashrus. It'll require whatever other compromise. Look what you're losing. But on the other hand, consider what you stand to gain. The rewards that are indescribable, that are infinite, of a different level. Right? So you stand to lose a few bucks, you know? But look what you stand to gain. You've got to consider those things. Right? It's very, very important for feeling good about doing the mitzvahs. You stand to lose something by doing an aveira, right? You know, I'm hungry. I'm really, really hungry, right? And, you know, stop there at the thing that you walk by the place in the airport, look around, nobody sees. You know, it smells really good, right? I'm really, really starving. But on the other hand, if you think about, right, that flame broil, not on the burger, but on something else, right? So then you realize that whatever you stand to gain by doing the aveira is really, right, you stand to lose a whole lot more. Right? So we were all inculcated on that approach, and that's the simple pshat in the Mishnah, and it's certainly a true pshat in the Mishnah. I want to tell you a radical, radical pshat. The only thing is, and I do mean to be dramatic, but I also mean to be serious. You cannot leave in the middle of this pshat. Okay, somebody has to leave like at 9:24 or 9:25. Has to leave now. Okay, if you're staying now, you have to stay till the end, because this is a dangerous pshat. This is definitely in the don't try this at home variety. Okay, this is a dangerous pshat, but it's an important pshat in the mission. Okay, this is an implied commitment, folks. This pshat comes from the Mitzvah Yehoshua. Mitzvah Yehoshua was a descendant of the Volozhiner dynasty, and it's a commentary to Pirkei Avos, which is really printed as an introduction, and only an introduction to Pirkei Avos. Very, very important introduction. It's printed in the Ruach Chaim and Reb Chaim Volozhiner's commentary on Pirkei Avos. It's printed in there, and what he does is really he shows the thematic approaches of the sages. In other words, this Tana says this in Pirkei Avos, so it's one, he has one line in Pirkei Avos, this is what he says, but I can show you that it's based on other things which we find in the life of this Tana. It's a very, very interesting introduction, and he says there are six different kinds of contexts which you will find for statements of Tanaim, and he brings illustrations of these. So he doesn't comment on the whole Pirkei Avos, he comments on some selected examples which he draws from Pirkei Avos. Very, very, very worthwhile. Start Pirkei Avos after Pesach, you know, between Pesach and Shavuos at least. So something to look at. But listen to the approach which he says. He says it based on these kinds of cross-references of the same people, but we're not going to focus as much on the cross-references which he brings to support it as on the Pshat itself. He says, mitzvahs have rewards, have positive things to them, and they could have negative things to them. Negative things, not, okay, gosh, this is going to cost me $50, right? Or, gosh, I can't go to that show, whatever it is, because of the mitzvah. There could be a negative piece within a mitzvah. You have to calculate, when you look at a mitzvah, there's the positive in the mitzvah, and there's the negative in the mitzvah. And you have to calculate to figure, should I be doing this mitzvah? Averos? Of course, there are negative things in Averos. That's why they call them Averos. But there also could be positive things in Averos. There could also be schar Averos. I'm not talking about, oh, you know what, I'm really hungry, right? I'd love to eat that food. Right, it tastes good. I always wondered what real shrimp tasted like, right, or something like that. So, let's do it. That's not what we're talking about. There could be real, actual, positive value in Aveira. Example or illustration. The Gemara says, "Gedola Aveira lishma, mi mitzvah shaloi lishma." An Aveira being done lishma for its sake, now that's a very misleading way to translate it, but for the sake of Hashem for a really good reason, could be greater than a mitzvah which is done shelo lishma, not necessarily for the most perfect reason. And what's the Gemara's illustration of this? The Gemara's illustration is the following. Devora, the prophetess, sings a song after the dramatic victory. What is it over the Canaanim, over Sisera? What is it? She sings Shiras Devora, the song of Devora, and she says, Tavorech minoshim yoel eshes chever hakeni minoshim boel tavera. She should be blessed, Yoel, the wife of chever hakeni, should be blessed beyond the women in the tent. Who are the women in the tent? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Right? The all-stars. The Jewish matriarchs, the greatest tzidkaniyos, we would have said, right? Who built the Jewish home, who built the Jewish people, the wives of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Yoel should be blessed beyond them. Who was Yoel? You know who Yoel was? Yoel was the wife of a dignitary in the Jewish people. A fellow who used to rub shoulders with the greats of Canaan, including Sisera. And when the Jewish people found themselves in battle with Sisera, and Sisera was running from the battle, you know, in the context of the battlefield, Yoel, who was, you know, they were old social, they used to socialize together, the families, she went and she said, Sisera, come, I'll hide you away in here. And she brought Sisera into her house. And then, on top of that, she seduced Sisera. And she weakened him that way. And when she weakened him, what did she do? She killed him.
A mistake.
So what did she do? Here's a married woman seducing another man, a non-Jew to boot. And what do we say? Her heroism, right? When she killed him, she went out and she was carrying the head of Sisera. That one, you know, then whoever was still fighting stopped fighting very, very quickly and ran away. It's a forerunner of other such dramatic stories we have in the story of Hanukkah and other such stories. Says the Gemara, Yoel is blessed beyond Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. What? The pure Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, the matriarchs, less than this, what do you call it, seductress? Says the Gemara, what Yoel did was an Aveira. What Yoel did was Lishma. She had it and used it as a tool to save the Jewish people.
And as such, for that action, for that dark, cloudy action, it's considered bigger and better than the beautiful marriage of Avram and Sarah, and Sarah's role in it. I mean, you know, that was a beautiful marriage also. It wasn't just a mitzvah. It's a beautiful marriage also. Yoel was probably disgusted by what she did. Right? You know, Tovason shel Rishoyim, Ra'i Eitel Tzadikim, the Gemara says in this context. What the Rasha thinks is nice, the righteous person thinks is disgusting. So what is that? What do you have there? You have there that the mitzvah has a cloudy part to it. The Avera has a beautiful part to it. Can you get more confusing than that? Where the method of salvation for the Jewish people above and beyond is something which at its basic level is an Avera? Can you begin to understand that there's such a thing as being metayer es hasheretz, purifying hasheretz? So he says that's the pshat in the Mishnah, and again he proves it beyond what I'm telling you from other similar statements which are found. He brings a medrash, I think, in Koheles Rab or something like that, where he also interprets the same Rebbe interprets the pasuk there in that context. Anything be'itai, right? I think it's a kol asiyah for be'itai. So Rebbe says afilu devar avera. Everything is good in its time. So he says afilu devar avera, even an avera. In its time, and Avera also has its time. Right? That's the idea. That's the way he plugs them together with Rebbe over here, who says, you have to calculate the schar of an Avera. You have to figure out the gain which could be coming from an Avera.
Is it considered an Avera in this context?
Of course, ultimately, it's considered a mandated action.
I mean, we have a classic, another example in my profession, where normally you can't be Mechal Shabbos, somebody is Pekuach Nefesh in front of you. Whether you want to say it's Taylor, whether it's that's a separate issue. But
go to our Dechliya.
Right.
Okay, good example. An Aveira of Chilul Shabbos, a mitzvah of Hatzol of a single person. You understand that by Yoel, it's only valid because of Hatzol as Yisrael. Normally, the act which she did is Yehoreg Val Yavor. A person has to give up their life rather than commit adultery. But what she was doing was, like Esther did after her, she did such an act for the sake of saving the Jewish people, and that was its justification. That's what made it from the Avera into the mitzvah. But the world is a complex place when actions which are terrible could become actions which are dramatically wonderful, and actions which are wonderful can be seen as not so necessarily wonderful. Right? Shmira Shabbos. I want us to keep the Shabbos no matter what. Right? And a person dies as a result. There's your ambiguity. That's the world which we have. That's the world of Das Tovara, of the confusion of these issues. And so we need to discriminate very, very carefully. Now, be very, very careful. Again, this is not something that we readily or generally, you know, in any which way, apply. We don't walk out of here and say, okay, so now, let me look at this mitzvah. I see some good things about it, but on the other hand, I don't see. So there's some things about it which I don't think are so good, given the situation, and therefore, I'm going to skip it, right? Or, you know, find the positive value of Averis, and therefore try to do them.
Well, Moshe, how do you get off the ground if we say, Ein Or Miyadeh Schar Mitzvah? I mean, how is having the chashiv when I don't know what the schar is?
Right. So the line of Iyata Yodea Matan Schar and Shal Mitzvahs, right, you don't realize the great Matan Schar, the infinite reward, that is in the category of the first basic interpretation. Right? And that certainly is supporting that, to imagine the reward of mitzvahs. And that, you know, that's in that Mishnah. Whether it's the Taich, the translation of that Mishnah or not, whether it's too creative to be the translation of the Mishnah, but the statement itself in any case, the idea itself in any case, is for sure true. It's not definitely applicable. You know, again, something that we can apply.
It doesn't even have like simple applications like they say commonly, like, you know, doing chesed outside the house when it's at a cost of
correct
inside the house.
Correct. correct. Right? You cannot look at things with perfect simplicity. It's a wonderful, absolutely wonderful thing to do daf yomi, because that way the person can make sure that they're learning every day, no matter what comes. Right? Their wife, Leilein Rachmona Litzlan, is having a nervous breakdown, and they say, but daf yomi, right? At all costs, I'm joining the universal yeshiva, and I have to be there. This is when shiur starts. I'm sorry, right? You're going to have to be left holding the bag. Crazy. Why? Because the person is falling into a very, very simple trap. And the trap is to imagine that we're still living in the world of black and white. And we're not. We're not. Now, das has to be used to distinguish. You have to connect the right thing, the connecting parts to each other. You have to make them at this point match up. That is now the das which is needed. There's more to talk about this, but it's a very, very fundamental piece of thinking and looking at the world to understand that there is this fundamental mixing in everything. There's a fundamental mixing. Yes.
Here's what I'm struggling with, because we started off talking about the different nitiyas and how that different nitiya is going to affect a certain decision process, and specifically the halachic process. And then we're moving on to a discussion of, let's say, moral discernment. And I guess maybe I'm having a little difficulty connecting. You know, when we talk about the different nitiyas, which is generally teva, a person can look at something this way, but even look at it that way. They're both pure, they're both tahor. Moral discernment seems to be a slightly different track. And when we talk about good and bad versus a halakha discernment, which there is not necessarily good or bad, it's just a different way of looking at it.
Well, I'm not sure about. See, the arguments which exist, osir matir, no, they're not necessarily all escaping from a moral plane. They're not, you know, they're all not. It's not just that there are no disagreements on issues which you would definitely call, you know, moral issues. I think that this kind of a netia, an inclination, and a difference of opinion which would exist as a result, would exist in that area as well. I think that the, you know, osir matir, machshir posel, is that reserved for simply for this? There are no arguments, for instance, in the zikin. There are no arguments in in ritzicha, you know, in those things. There aren't, you know, great debates, halachic debates about whether this kind of an abortion is permitted or whether it's forbidden, right? Something which you might call, you know, a moral question, a moral dilemma. And the teos do play a role there. I don't know that this is reserved for amoral questions. Let's talk a little bit about the idea here now of the netios. Of the netios means the inclination of the person to be able to be able to see it, because ultimately this is his basis for machlokas. So we have these complex things, and there are different elements to them. But then we have complex people who are looking at them, and the people are different, you know, as they look at these things, and they're different. There are different levels of difference. On the one hand, we have the difference which we talked about at the beginning of studying the Maral. We spoke about the people whose hearts are open, like the opening of the Ulam. In other words, that the wisdom is overwhelming. It's even more than a normal, it's much more than their physical drives and interests. And those who, the door is much more narrowly opened. Right? So you can have between, so to speak, a morally superior person, a person who's more of a person of neshama, and a person who's less a creature of neshama. And there you can understand they have a machlokes. They see things very, very differently. But even when you're dealing where you're dealing all with people who are righteous, who are sages, who, let's say for argument's sake, they're on the same level playing field in terms of that. But they're still going to focus in on different aspects, and they're going to see things differently. The Maral elsewhere makes a comment where he speaks about the fact of how the sages attribute things. the language of the Gemara, and the Gemara says, I think I mentioned to you the first week, was Aliba demanda amar. The term for according to this person is Aliba, following the heart of this person. In the end, people will focus on things differently. People will see, people will be sensitive to different aspects. Moshe and Aaron were two great, great, great tzaddikim, Yesodei Olam. Moshe and Aaron were two completely different people. They were brothers, 3 years apart. But they were completely different people in terms of the things which they saw, in terms of their focus. Moshe Rabbeinu saw din, and Aaron HaKohen saw shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned with preserving the truth of Hashem's Torah. Aaron HaKohen was preserved with preserving the integrity of Hashem's people. A distinction which exists all over the place. People see things differently. People are different. HaKadosh Baruch Hu endows them. Chesed and Yira, Din, right, Emes, Tifer, all the different midos, all the different character traits which we learn about, which we talk about, they all go into the composite mix of a person and make them therefore be able to see different aspects. In a certain sense, when we have a Sanhedrin of 70, is because on a certain level, what do we say? What's an expression, a famous expression about arguments that we have in the Torah? Shivim panim l'Torah. There are 70 faces, 70 aspects within Torah. What does that mean? On a certain level, 70 is the basic division point. There were 70 Jews who came down to Mitzrayim that formed the kernel of the Jewish people. There are 70 nations of the world. There's a certain limitation of the categories of, you know, perspectives of pieces of that which exists in the world. And so on the Sanhedrin, where decisions are being made amongst the Jewish people, we're supposed to have 70 sages. Why? Because these 70 sages will represent the 70 different facets, the 70 different ways of looking at it within the world of confusion. And from that, we have to come out with a predominant result, with halacha l'maisa. Moshe Rabbeinu, in the pure form, didn't need the 70. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was, in a sense, a throwback to Adam before the sin. He wasn't a perfect throwback. He also died. B'shegam hu basar. He was also end up being, but as close as it gets, right? The spirituality taking over the physicality, the shining countenance, the literally bright shining countenance of Moshe Rabbeinu, all of these things, Moshe Rabbeinu was closer to the absolute truth, which is why Torah's Moshe has no suffix, has no question, which is why the Torah could only have been given through Moshe Rabbeinu. But once it got more earthy and he saw the people were more earthy, remember, when did he create the Sanhedrin of 70? When the people were saying, give us meat, give us meat. We don't want to eat the spiritual food of the man. Give us meat. We can't just sustain our spirits, we have to sustain our bodies. It was a national version of, you know, the tree of knowledge. So then we need this diversity of opinion in order to look at all the facets and come to a clear conclusion. That's Bali Asufos, probing the true different aspects of a confusing world. Yirtz Hashem, next time we learn, which again will not be next Sunday because of Erev Pesach and whatever else will be going on here, but will be Yirtz Hashem, hopefully Chol HaMoed, we'll try to learn the confusing.